Chapter 17, text 28. This is a verse that Srila Prabhupada quoted yesterday in the purport to his to the sloka that Prahlad Maharaj spoke to Nrisimhadev. Narayana para sarve nakutaschana bibhyati Svarg apavarga narakesh vapitulyarta darshina narayana para. Pure devotees who are interested only in the service of Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarve, all. Na, not. Kutaschana, anywhere. Bibhyati, are afraid. Svarga, in the higher planetary systems. Appavarga, in liberation. Narakeshu, and in hell. Api, even. Tulya, equal. Artha, value. Darshinaha, who see. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. Purport. This chapter is Mother Parvati curses Chitraketu. Parvati might naturally have inquired how devotees become so exalted. Therefore, this verse explains that they are Narayana Para, simply dependent on Narayan. They do not mind reverses in life because in the service of Narayan, they have learned to tolerate whatever hardships there may be. They do not care whether they are in heaven or in hell. They simply engage in the service of the Lord. This is their excellence. Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam. They are liberally engaged in the service of the Lord, and therefore they are excellent. By using the word Britya Brityanam, Lord Shiva pointed out that although Chitraketu provided one example of tolerance and excellence, all the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord as eternal servants are glorious. They have no eagerness to be happy by being placed in the heavenly planets, becoming liberated, or becoming one with Brahman, the supreme effulgence. These benefits do not appeal to their minds. They are simply interested in giving direct service to the Lord. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Viranta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschatya Desha Tharine Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Yesterday, we stopped at the point where Michael realized that he had to help Srila Prabhupada find a new place for his budding society. There wasn't a name yet for the society, but he had followers, he had students who were regularly coming to the loft to hear Srila Prabhupada. So Michael, he knew every week The Village Voice, which is the most, it was the most popular, at that time, the Beat Generation, the most popular newspaper within the Greenwich Village area, New York City, where all the beat people lived and hung out. So it came out every Wednesday. And he also knew that there was a candy store right in front of the Village Voice publishing house. So as soon as the Village Voice came out on Wednesday morning, that would be the first place where they would drop off the copies. So Michael waited there at the candy store for the Village Voice to get dropped off. As soon as he got that newspaper, he looked in the rental area. Rental area has houses, has shops, has different categories. So he was looking down, and about the second or third place that he saw seemed to be the right choice. It was a storefront just nearby, 26 Second Avenue, just near a corner. So he called up the number. It was a Mr. Gardiner, and he made an appointment with him for the same day to meet him there at the place. It was all walking distance. So Michael went there, and Mr. Gardiner came, and then soon after, Prabhupada came with Carl, at whose loft he was staying temporarily. And they all went in and saw this storefront. The storefront used to be a gift shop, and there was a big window, and above the window was a sign that says, Matchless Gifts. Now, where did that name come from? Someone explained to me one time that the person who owned the gift shop used to make little gifts out of matchboxes, piling them up, and the matchboxes didn't have any more matches in them. So because he used to make these gifts, boxes and light handle, you know, things like that, so he called it Matchless Gifts for that reason. Of course, it had a second meaning. Matchless also means nothing can compare to it. And then the third meaning for us is nothing compares to the matchless gift of Krishna consciousness. So that signboard stayed there. They went in, and where the big window was, there was a place for sitting. So they sat down there and they looked at the place. There were two light bulbs hanging from the ceiling, and other than that, it was an empty room. There was a washroom attached to it. And it seemed like a good enough place. The price was also right. It was $100 a month. Money had different value in those days. Like, for instance, in America, some of Prabhupada's students later, Brahmananda and Satsarup, they were getting $400 a month. So $100 a month would have been one quarter of what they were getting their salary of. So it was a bit, but Prabhupada felt that he would be able to collect that much. And of course, Prabhupada didn't have money at the time, so Michael and Carl, they discussed between themselves, and they told Mr. Gardiner, the first month's rent we'll take care of between the two of us to help out the Swami. So then, Swamiji, Srila Prabhupada, he said to Mr. Gardiner that we have a charitable society that is teaching God consciousness, and these are some of our trustees, these young men, and we would like you to also become a trustee. And the word trustee sounds a little important, as if you have some responsibility, but not direct responsibility. So Mr. Gardiner, he felt quite honored by that he would become a trustee member. And then Prabhupada handed him a set of his books, the three books, as a gift. And then Prabhupada explained to him that each of our trustees, to be a trustee, they donate to the society that didn't exist, $15 a month. So then Mr. Gardiner, he realized there was more to it than just being a trustee. So then Prabhupada said to him, you wouldn't have to donate the $15, you can just cut it off of the rent every month. So that took it down to $85 a month. And Mr. Gardner, he felt so honored having the books and becoming a trustee that he agreed. Then Mr. Gardner said, I also have an apartment that's free behind this. So Mr. Gardner took them through a little passageway, and there was a small garden with trees and shrubs, took them to the adjoining apartment building, and on the first floor was a nice two-room apartment, a front room and then a little attached room that was separated by a window. And there was a kitchen area also, small kitchen. So they liked it. They thought this would be very convenient for Srila Prabhupada. He could stay there, and then he could have his programs at the matchless gift shop. So that was another $80 or something, $85. So they agreed to it. Where they were going to get the money, they still didn't know. They would promise to take care of the first month for Prabhupada. So meanwhile, there were people living in the area. It was a lot of immigrants from different countries, particularly Puerto Rico and Dominican. They are Hispanic-speaking people, poor immigrants. There were a lot of Pentecostal churches. The Pentecostal Christians, they do a lot of singing and dancing, something like what we do, but for Jesus. And they would have their doors open and chairs, and you could look in and see the people dancing and singing as an invitation. So also there were hip people there, young men and women. Some of them were New Yorkers, and some of them had come from different parts of the country. Most of them were from middle-class families. Their parents were well-established. They had everything they could hope for in the world. But the youth were dissatisfied that, what is the use of this life? You just grow up, get married, have kids, you have to work, then your kids get married. Then it was just a useless cycle. They couldn't see the purpose of getting into this mainstream life that their parents had worked so hard to bring them up in. So they were rejecting that. They were dropping out of mainstream society and looking for alternatives. And there were some leaders to this movement. Some of them were poets, like Allen Ginsberg. Some of them were professors, like Dr. Timothy Leary, who tried to encourage people to expand their consciousness through the taking of psychedelic drugs. Some of them were singers, Bob Dylan. A lot went into music, poetry, and experimenting with drugs for these young people. So because this was becoming a counterculture, they needed their own community. And two main communities were developed in America. This phenomenon had never happened anywhere else in the whole world, where people were dropping out of affluent society, searching for some purpose in life. So in the East Coast, that center for these hip people was just right there in the village, East Village. There's East Village, West Village, Greenwich Village. And all the youth congregated there, and they would find cheap places to live. And then on the West Coast, there was San Francisco, an area called Haight-Ashbury. So here Prabhupada was, now by the invitation of these young people, and with their help, he had his own place. He had a meeting place, he had an apartment. It was an empty storefront, so he put up on the window, just with some tape, a little piece of paper that says, Bhagavad Gita classes, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and transcendental sound vibration, 7 p.m. So there was one welfare worker who lived nearby. He used to walk past the matchless gift shop every day on his way home from work. His name was Steve Gorino, who later became Satsvarup Das. And he noticed one day that the matchless gift shop was empty, and he saw this little piece of paper. So he was attracted by this transcendental vibrations and By that time, Bhagavad Gita had become a little popular amongst his hip group. So he was curious. He decided he would go and attend that night, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. At the same time, Prabhupada moved in 2 days later after he met Mr. Gardner. Mr. Gardner painted everything and Prabhupada moved in. He was alone there. He was walking nearby, and south to the village is an area we heard yesterday that, just like birds, different types of ethnic groups, they all stay in one place in New York, like birds. Parrots always stay with parrots, crows stay with crows. That's the way it was in New York also. So there was a part in the south called Chinatown, where all the Chinese people lived. There was Little Italy, there was Little India, and like that. So Chinatown had a street called Mott Street, and some students, one was a professor, they were all dropouts in the sense of dropout from society. They had gone to India searching for a guru, came back unsuccessful, and one of them, who was an English professor at Ohio State University, he saw Prabhupada walking with his sannyas outfit and his white plastic pointy shoes. And because he had just come back from India, he immediately recognized him as a holy man because he had seen people like this in India. So he was very curious, what's a holy man doing here walking in the middle of New York City? So he smiled at Prabhupada and went up to him. And the first thing he said to him is, "Are you from India?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes." And you? "No, I'm from America, but I've just come from India." And then Prabhupada, he explained to him that he just got a center here, and he took Howard to this mattress gift shop and showed it to him to ask him what he thought of the place. And Howard thought, "Yeah, it's a good location. There are a lot of young people here. I think it'll be good for you." So then Prabhupada asked him that, "You please come Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and you bring your friends." So when Prabhupada had his first meeting, evening, 7 o'clock, Howard came, and he brought his friends. They were his roommates. One was Wally. He would become Umapati. One was Keith. He would become Kirtanananda, Howard, Wally. And then they had a friend who didn't live with them but hung out with them. His name was Charlie. He would become Achyutananda. So they all came with Howard that day, that evening. And Steve also came. And there were a few other people because Prabhupada still had his group from the loft, Michael and Carl, people like that. They also came, Jan. So that was the beginning of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita classes at the Matchless Gift Shop, 26 Second Avenue. Now, some of them, because they were looking for a guru, they were looking for answers to the questions of life, some of them became more dedicated. They wanted to actually devote themselves to Prabhupada and Prabhupada's teachings. And the first to take the step was Keith. Keith asked Prabhupada if he could become his student, his disciple, and if he could serve him. So Prabhupada at that time, he had started a lunch program for anyone who wanted to come. He was making rice dal chapati and sabji all by himself, making as many chapatis as the young boys could eat. And some of them would eat up to 10 chapatis a day. So he taught Keith how to cook. And Keith also he moved in with Prabhupada. He became like a houseboy, a servant. Anything Prabhupada needed, Keith was there to help him. So Keith started the cooking. And all of these visitors who came in the evening, they heard about the lunch. And they started coming for lunch at 1 o'clock every day, including Steve. That was his lunch break. He would come from the welfare office and sit down, and they would have a row with the boys all sitting, and they would hand out plates, and Prabhupada would come around and serve them all. And Prabhupada would also sit down and eat with them. There was one young boy named Stanley. He was younger than the other boys. And his mother came with him. And his mother told Prabhupada that he can stay with you, but you have to take care of him personally. So Prabhupada would always have Stanley sit next to him. And Prabhupada would encourage everyone, eat more, eat more. You're not eating enough. And he wouldn't let anyone get away without completely filling themselves up. He wanted to fill them with prasadam. And no one had ever eaten like this before in their life. Steve said, although he had tried to be vegetarian, the only thing he ate was donuts and cookies and milk. He didn't know how to cook. So for these boys, it became life-saving that Prabhupada was cooking. They'd get one meal a day from Prabhupada. And one day, Steve had to, in charge there at the office, he said, Steve, you got to stay back. We have to take care of one case. And Steve went into a panic that he wasn't going to get his lunch that day. So he called Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had a phone in his room. Prabhupada was very proud. He had a phone in the loft and he had a phone in his room. Until too many people bothered him, then he took the phone out. So Prabhupada answered the phone. He said, hello, Swamiji. And Steve said, Swamiji, I can't come at 1 o'clock. Could you please save me a plate of prasadam? And Swamiji said, yes, I'll save for you. So then Steve came at 2 o'clock. By that time, everyone was gone. The room was all empty. And he sat down on the floor. And Prabhupada came. With the plate of prasadam, Steve is sitting on the floor and he puts the plate of prasadam on the floor right in front of him. And Steve's thinking, well, this is the way you feed a dog in America. You know, you put the food on the floor and then, this was a big realization for him, as if he was Prabhupada's dog. So for the first time, he was so grateful to Prabhupada. He had seen the other devotees doing it for the first time. He bowed down to Prabhupada and thanked him. Now, also, during the evening program, the devotees, not devotees yet, but the visitors, they would come in before 7 o'clock and wait for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would promptly come in at 7 o'clock. And the core devotees, they knew that when Prabhupada came in, they would all bow down. But one of them, who had joined a little later, first, his brother came, Bruce, who would become Brahmananda. He did his thesis on Bhagavad Gita. He was adamantly searching for spiritual knowledge. And one of his friends and former roommates heard about Prabhupada. He stumbled, he walked in by accident one day. He just saw Bhagavad Gita written on that little piece of paper. He went in. And when he saw that Prabhupada, a real Swami, was teaching Bhagavad Gita, he went and told Bruce about this, that you check this out, 26 Second Avenue. So as soon as Bruce went there, he immediately wanted to become Prabhupada's disciple. He knew a little bit more because he had been studying. So Bruce moved in, Greg moved in, they were brothers, and their mother came, and their mother, she was trying to understand what their new lifestyle was. So they brought her up to meet Prabhupada, and Prabhupada, he had one folding chair. The rest of the whole apartment was bare. Prabhupada sat in that little room. He had his tin trunk that he brought with him, and he had set that up as his desk. And he had a little chatai behind it. So he would sit there during the day, he had his typewriter on his desk, and at night he would just sleep right on the chatai. He lived very, very simply. So she came in, met Prabhupada, and she was quite impressed by Prabhupada, that he was a genuine, saintly person. And then Prabhupada explained to her, your sons have come as my students, and would you like to give a donation? Because I'm taking care of them now, they're living here now. And she was struck. She said to Prabhupada, I just donated my two sons. So Prabhupada laughed at that. And later, when the initiation time came, that's much later, about a month later, Prabhupada told Bruce and Greg to invite your parents. So she came, and after the initiation, Prabhupada told them, now you go offer your obeisances to your mother, bow down to your mother. And she was quite overtaken by that. And even one time, Prabhupada sent Brahmananda to the house to see his parents. And he knocked on the door, and his mother opened up the door, and she didn't see anybody because he had already bowed down in front of her. So Prabhupada was teaching the devotees that they should offer respects to their parents. Whereas Steve, who was Satsuru, I'm just talking about one aspect of how Prabhupada was training the devotees. At one point, Hayagriva, he made a little prospectus. We have that in Prabhupada's room. It's purple and black. And it was quite impressive about the philosophy, about the peace formula. So Steve was, he thought he should call up his parents, tell them what he was doing, send them this prospectus, and they weren't impressed at all. They were from a Catholic background. So when they saw what their son was actually doing, they said, so long as you're a part of this, we want nothing to do with you. We disown you. And Steve was so heartbroken, actually he was crying, and he went to Swamiji and told him, my parents just rejected me, they disowned me because I've become your student. And Prabhupada didn't say much, but later he wrote a letter to Steve, they're all living right there, that I am your eternal father and your other father is a temporary father. So Prabhupada, these first students, he had to help them understand how they were entering into a new aspect of their life, where their eternal father, their eternal mother of the Vedas, was now going to give them shelter. So Prabhupada was giving these classes at 7 o'clock, Bhagavad Gita, and more people started to come. It was the buzz then in the village. And up to 75 people would sometimes come. So Prabhupada told the devotees, you have to get an announcement board, like what we used to have here. You can change the lettering. But the devotees didn't have any money. So they went around, Brahmananda went around, looking for an announcement board. It was $55. Nobody had that much. They gave all the money to Prabhupada. He said, you get that announcement board. So they got the announcement board, they put it up, and as soon as they put it up, more and more people started coming, because then it looked, you know, they could read it, they saw it, it wasn't just a little piece of paper. So that was a big addition to attracting people. Now there was one aspect of those classes that it was always there. Three things. One was, because of the neighborhood they lived in, there were these little girls that used to screech outside of the storefront. Whether they were just playing or whether they were doing it on purpose, all through Prabhupada's lectures, you can hear these little girls screaming and screeching at the door. And they'd have to stop, someone would have to go tell them to go away. And there was a big dog that was chained up nearby. And the dog would bark all throughout the lectures. And then there were men, a man, get out of here, get out of here. So, and there was an upstairs neighbor. Because Prabhupada, once the young men started living in the storefront, he started having morning classes also. He would have a kirtan, they would chant japa together, then they would have another kirtan, he would speak. So this annoyed the upstairs neighbor, and Prabhupada would tell the boys, don't play so loud. But the upstairs neighbor would get so agitated that he made a hole from his bathtub and poured water down it. So as soon as the devotees started singing, suddenly from the ceiling, all this water would start falling down, just in in anger. So there were a little bit of negative aspects, but on a whole, it was very popular. Now, it was July, Prabhupada moved in on June 1st, and Prabhupada, being very pragmatic and an experienced 70-year-old gentleman, he knew that if they were going to have any success, they had to register their society where they were. He knew that from India, the League of Devotees and Gaudiya Math. He learned everything from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So he wanted to incorporate what he started to call the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And sometimes people would ask, why not God consciousness? He said, God is too vague. If they don't know who Krishna is, we will tell them. International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and we will call it ISKCON. So Prabhupada had it all planned already, but he needed the legal help. So again, Carl came through. He knew how to set up charitable organizations. He had a lawyer, Stephen Goldsmith, who was a young Jewish lawyer up on Park Avenue, the rich part of town. And he had Stephen Goldsmith come to 26 Second Avenue, and Stephen really liked it. He used to come regularly. He would bring his wife and his two kids, and they really liked the doll that Prabhupada made. So Stephen would come and listen to the lectures. And he made all of the incorporated papers. And one evening, 7 o'clock, he was there with his little attaché case. It was July 13th, I think, or 17th. Prabhupada was giving his lecture. And Prabhupada saw Steve in the audience. And he was discussing misinterpretation of Bhagavad Gita. How if you have something pure, but then you misinterpret it, everything becomes upside down. And he gave the example, he said, just like our Mr. Goldsmith, he is a lawyer, and he knows what lawyers can do to twist the law in their direction. He said one time a rental law was made in Calcutta, and one lawyer turned this law completely upside down, and the government had to completely remove that law and make a new law because of one advocate. So he said, Mr. Goldsmith, you have something to say? Yes, should I speak now? Yes, please, stand up. So he took out of his attaché some papers. He said, we've made this incorporated society now and we have to have signers. The signers had already pre-agreed with Prabhupada that they would sign it as trustees. And it was official. The first year there would be three trustees, then second year, then third year. So there were a number of trustees that had to sign. None of them were actually core members who were living there already, who had dedicated themselves. It was people who were just, they appreciated what Prabhupada was doing, so they agreed to sign these papers on behalf of Prabhupada. So then it became official. ISKCON. Now, Prabhupada, he had a procedure also, and everyone would, of course, no one knew the culture, completely different culture in America, how to eat, how to talk, everything was different. So they would watch Prabhupada in everything he did, and they noticed that Prabhupada would only eat with his right hand, so they started eating with their right hand. They noticed that he would never touch his hand to his mouth. He would just kind of throw the food into his mouth. So they would try it. They'd get it all over themselves. And the most amazing thing was, after his lecture each evening, one boy would bring in a wooden bowl an apple. And Prabhupada would cut that apple in half, and half again, half again, half again, so that everyone in the room, he would take a piece of apple, throw it in his mouth, as he always did, and then everyone in the room would take a piece of apple. And they would watch Prabhupada. He would chew that apple with his mouth closed, and near to where he was sitting was a sink. And he would expertly, exactly spit the seeds right into the sink. And they were just amazed. And how Prabhupada would drink water without touching his mouth to the glass. They had never seen anything like this. So they were learning from Prabhupada how to develop some culture in their behavior. Also, Prabhupada, also Keith was the first to put on a dhoti and shave his head, and then the other boys decided they would do that also. And finally, in August, because they would only have their kirtans inside the storefront, and there was a park nearby, a few blocks away, Tompkins Square Park. And in America, you can't just do things. You have to get permits for everything. So they got a permit that they could chant in the park from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. So Prabhupada decided that one Sunday in August, now we will go to the park. So they had their first procession, and everyone was feeling a little shy. They had never chanted in public before. They had their ordinary clothes on, but they didn't know what to expect. They saw these Puerto Rican boys making fun of them, and Keith had a dhoti on. They say, "Hey, you forgot to get out of your bed sheet this morning." You know, they were making fun of them like that. So they get to the park, and they sit down under a big oak tree. So they had 3 hours. Prabhupada, for an hour and a half, led the kirtan. And Prabhupada had taught them how to dance by that time. So Brahmananda and Bruce and Charlie, they got up and started to dance. Now this was such a never-before-seen spectacular event in Tompkins Square Park that everyone who was in the park, they came over to watch. The little kids on their bicycles, the old Ukrainian ladies, everyone was just standing there watching them. Some of them started to sing with them. So for an hour and a half, Prabhupada sang. And then he stood under the tree. He spoke for a few minutes about the benefits of chanting Hare Krishna. And then for another hour and a half, he sang. So 3 hours, Prabhupada sang nonstop, while the devotees danced and played their musical instruments and all the people came and gathered. Sometimes on other Sundays, when the tree was taken, they would go to the amphitheater. It was a big stage, open stage. They would chant there and even more people would come. So this was their first Sankirtan. Now later, much later, this was in maybe December, it was the first time Prabhupada left New York, but this is just in context of the Sankirtan movement. No, it was very hot. It was August. Anyway, it was a very, very hot day, and Prabhupada had gone to San Francisco for the Mantra Rock program and to establish the San Francisco temple. It was the first time Prabhupada was away from the devotees, and it was so hot that night in the storefront, they decided, let's just go outside and chant. So they went outside to chant, and the same thing happened right on the street. All the people came and started watching the chanting, and this was how Sankirtan was started in the Western countries. It was a hot day. They all went out on the street, and then they decided after that they were going to go out regularly because it was such an attractive thing, and all the people followed them back to the temple afterwards. And when Prabhupada wasn't there, then Brahmananda would speak. Prabhupada made him the first temple president. So there was Michael, and coming up was Janmashtami. Now, just before Janmashtami, Prabhupada made an announcement. He said, "I'm leaving back to India in 2 weeks." Everyone was completely shocked. What were they going to do without the Swamiji? They were like newborn little babies. Who was going to take care of them? So they said, "Why? Why is Swamiji going to leave us?" And Wally, he said, "I think it has to do with his visa. Because 3 months, then he got another 3 month extension. And for Indians, they don't allow you to extend more than once. So he has to go back to his country in order to get a new visa." So they said, "No, we can't allow Swamiji. We have to do something." So one very famous poet, Allen Ginsberg, He used to come to these programs in the evening. Prabhupada didn't treat him any differently than any of the other boys and girls sitting there. He didn't treat him like a celebrity, although amongst the beat people, he was like the spokesman for the counterculture. So he would sit there with the other students and listen to the lecture and take part in the kirtan. But they knew he had influence because he was very famous. So they went to him. I think Wally and Bruce went to him and said, "You got to help Swamiji. We can't let him leave." So Alan said, "Well, yeah, I know a congressman. It'll take a few hundred rupees, but we can put a bill and we'll get the congressman to pass it and we'll keep him in the country." So he went, he did it all. He got Prabhupada a 6-month extension. Cost $300, and then all the, you know, they all got together whatever money they had and they gave it. So that way Prabhupada was able to stay another 6 months in America. Then Janmashtami was coming up, and no one knew what Janmashtami was. They hardly knew who Krishna was. They only knew Swamiji. And they only knew the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and the Bhagavad Gita. The Prabhupada, he was lecturing at that time from Bhagavad Gita and also from Chaitanya Charitamrita, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami. And those lectures were how we got the book Teachings of Lord Chaitanya from the Chaitanya Charitamrita lectures. So Janmashtami was coming up, and Prabhupada explained that in India, Janmashtami is like your Christmas here, because it's the birth of Lord Krishna. Krishna didn't actually take birth, but he appeared on that day, just like the sun. You can say that the sun, the eastern horizon is the mother of the sun, but we know the sun is always there. It's just the first time we see the sun. So Krishna is also like that. Krishna is always present, but sometimes he appears in our vision and sometimes he disappears. So Krishna appeared here 5,000 years ago on this day of Janmashtami in very difficult circumstances. His uncle was waiting to kill him. So then Prabhupada began to speak about Janmashtami. And Prabhupada said, he's just openly, to anyone who was interested, he said, "I'm going to be holding initiation ceremony on that day. If anyone would like to take initiation and become my disciple, they can take initiation." Nobody had heard of even the word initiation before. What does it mean? And Prabhupada said, "Initiation means when you accept the spiritual master as God." And everyone was, it was exactly the opposite of what Prabhupada had been teaching them for all the months. And then Prabhupada got out, he got up and he walked out. And they said, "No, we need some clarification." So they went up to Prabhupada's room and they asked Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, you've been telling us that any guru who says he's God, he's actually dog. So what does it mean to accept you as God?" He said, "It means you accept the spiritual master as the representative of God, because he is teaching you about God. And you give him the same respect that you would give God." So that made a little more sense. And the word spread around amongst the people, the young boys who were living there, the core group, and the visitors such as Steve, Michael, Jan, a few others. And they were all wondering, "Are you going to take, initiation?" "Well, maybe I'll take, you know." They didn't know how serious it was. "Maybe." Then Prabhupada, he explained to them, "You have to make..." Prabhupada had his Tulsi mala, but you couldn't get Tulsi in America. No one knew what Tulsi was in America. He said, "Well, you make some beads, 108 beads with one head bead. And in between each bead, so that each bead doesn't touch each other, you make a knot." So there were some craft shops. We all had beads like this in the early days. Craft shops, you can get these big red beads and the cord, and you tie up your own beads, big long beads, you wear them around your neck, they'd put it around twice, they'd be so long, and you chant on these beads. And Prabhupada was teaching them how to chant on beads. So they all got together, and Ray, he would become Ray Ram, Rai Ram. He asked Michael. He said, "You going to get initiated?" I said, "I don't know. You think I should?" "Well, I think, yeah, why not? You know, you've been a student for so long, why not?" He said, "Okay, get me some beads." So Ray went and got beads for Jan and Michael. And Prabhupada, he said, on Janmashtami, he told them all, whoever was interested, he said, "Janmashtami, we sit in the temple the whole day and don't eat anything until midnight. We just chant. We chant for half an hour on our beads. We chant kirtan for half an hour. And we read for half an hour, all day and night. And if you're too hungry, then I have fruit in my refrigerator, or you take some sugar candy." Nobody knew what sugar candy was. It was mystery. You don't get sugar candy in America. So it was taken by surprise. No one was ready for an all day and night fast. So some of them didn't think they could do it. Jan didn't think she could do it. Michael didn't think he could do it. Charlie didn't think he could. And they were, you know, by 1 o'clock, they were dizzy. Okay. "Jan, go out, get some rock candy." So Jan told Prabhupada, she said, "I have to go feed my cat." Prabhupada says, "No, don't feed your cat, just sit down." "No, I have to go feed my cat." So she went out, she tried to find rock candy. She went to all the shops. Nobody knew what sugar candy, rock candy was. They said, "Well, go up to 53rd Street, you might find it at a shop there, an ethnic shop." She couldn't go all the way up to 53rd, so she bought some little, what do you, they have here, Mentos, you know, these just little candies, sugar candies, little toffees. And she brought them back and she snuck them to Michael and Charlie, and while they were bending down, they put them in their mouth. And after that, they got a little sugar surge, so they were able to last for the rest of the night. And Steve, he was, you know, he had a job with the welfare, with the government, and he had been 2 years in the Navy. So in the Navy, it felt like prison to him, you know, in the military. And he had just been out for 2 years, and he liked his freedom. And he felt that this initiation, this might imprison me, you know, being a student and having a master. You know, he didn't like the idea. He didn't feel he was ready for it. So Janmashtami time, before the initiation the next morning, he disappeared and went back to his apartment. And he thought, "Let me just do some service." So the whole night he stayed up and typed Prabhupada's manuscripts. Because each person had a service. Before, when they were having lunch, Keith started to cook, and they would eat and leave. And they would leave everything for Prabhupada to clean up. And then finally they realized, well, Keith has started doing some service, let's do some service also. So they asked Prabhupada for different services. And Prabhupada had one person type, one person edit, one person taking notes of everything that Prabhupada said, and like that. So, and one person, like Gargamuni, he will go out and sell incense to make money for the temple. And Brahmananda, he had his job, and Steve had his job. So everyone had a service by that time. So Steve's job was typing. Now Howard, he would do the editing of Prabhupada's manuscripts. And Steve would retype after the editing and make perfect pages ready for printing. So he came the next morning. And the next day, because the next day was when the initiation was going to be, and Steve wanted to avoid that. So after the initiation, he came and handed Prabhupada a whole stack of tight papers. And Prabhupada said, "Oh, you did not come for the initiation?" He said, "No, I didn't feel I was ready yet, but I brought you these tight papers." And Prabhupada, he was very happy. And then Prabhupada said, "Can I give you more?" So he gave him a whole stack of manuscripts, and he said, "Swamiji, this will last me the whole winter to type." And then Swamiji said, I have enough manuscripts to last you your whole lifetime. And then he showed him all the Srimad Bhagavatam manuscripts, all the manuscripts he had. And Steve realized, yeah, he had a whole lifetime now of service. So then he said, then Swamiji said, I'll be having a second initiation 15 days from now on Radharani's birthday. So if you like, you can take part in that. He said, yes, I'll take part in that one. Because then Steve realized he had a lifetime of service here for the Swami. So Michael was living with his girlfriend Jan, and he, after hearing Prabhupada's lectures now for a few months, he realized that Prabhupada was not very pleased with this girlfriend-boyfriend arrangement. So he proposed to Jan, and she was totally shocked because in those days, boys and girls weren't interested in marrying. It was too much of a commitment. So she said, well, why? I mean, it's pretty nice the way it is now. Why do you want to get married? So he explained that, well, you know, Swamiji, he doesn't like it that we're living as girlfriend and boyfriend. I thought we could get married and we could ask Swamiji to perform the wedding ceremony, and that would really make a nice beginning to our marriage. Tomorrow we'll have to hear more. You want to continue? Okay. Finish the story. So she said, well, I'll have to think about it. Of course, they lived right there in the same loft together. I'll have to think about it. I'll let you know tomorrow. So tomorrow she accepts his proposal. And Michael, very happily, he goes to Swamiji and says, Swamiji, we'd like to get married. So Swamiji says, yes, tomorrow. Day after tomorrow, we'll do the wedding ceremony. So what do? We don't know how to have a wedding. Well, you wear white, and your wife should wear red, a red sari. And invite your family and invite your friends. So they called Jan's sister, Joan, who would become Jamuna. And she came. She was the only family member. And they called about 18 friends who lived in the neighborhood. And he went out and bought white pants and a white shirt. And he went to Little India and bought her a red sari. And when the shop owner realized it was for a wedding, he tried to sell him all the different ornaments. No. He knew that Jan was simply just bought her some earrings. So they had the ceremony. And Prabhupada, he had as his helper Joan in the kitchen. We all know those stories. We've heard from Jamuna. But one of the wonderful things that happened was that Bruce, who had been coming at that time, when he had that feast and we had a samosa, he decided then that he's going to become a devotee and get initiated by Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had made so many wonderful preparations. No one had ever experienced anything like it. So then 15 days later, he had the second initiation. The first initiation was 11 devotees, and the second initiation was just 3 devotees. Satsarup, Charlie had taken a vacation for a week from Krishna consciousness, so he missed the first one. So Steve, Charlie, and one other one, I forget who it was. So we'll hear tomorrow about Prabhupada and how he began to expand Krishna consciousness around the world. Hare Krishna.